So what are you gonna do?
Manage, like I always do.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 31.
Jeez.
State of Need. And now here are your needy hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah Needy Bunting.
See what you did there. We have some site business before we get into it. Sarah, do you want to tell our lovely listeners what we have to announce?
Sure. We have been talking in passing for quite some time about the 90210 book that we've been writing. This is not a bit. I mean, it is, and it's also full of bits, but it is called A Very Special 90210 Book. It is available from Abrams for pre-order. We will have a link in the show notes. It is coming out on my half birthday. I mean, in theory, we live in a whole different world from when they started working on this book. So
yeah.
But we're super excited about it. There are lots of little Easter eggs for you listeners, and we hope that you will have a look and pre-order it today.
Do you need to update it for coronavirus?
sprinkle a little delicious cumin on it. Marvelous medicinal antiseptic properties. I'm joking, not a doctor.
We don't, but it actually is true that not only do we live in a different world than when we started working on it, but we even kind of live in a different world than when I sent back my last version of like our edits, which was 2 weeks ago today. Like, they don't want us to send any stuff back to their office and no one is there anyway. Like,
yes. Like, hard copies are done.
In the wise words of 90210's most favorite character, Yoda, always in the motion the future is.
Indeed. So yeah, it's real. It's coming September 22nd, 2020. So we will have links, as Sarah said, in the show notes, both to Abrams, the publisher, and to Amazon, but it's also available anywhere else you buy books. If your local bookseller is having any deals, or if they're letting people pre-order, if they're doing curbside, whatever, support your local bookseller if you can. They are having a hard time right now.
It's true.
Shall we proceed, Sarah?
Yes, let us do that. Once again, into the 30s we go.
Yes. Starting with our C-plot, Joe and Jake are too square to bone a model. So Joe and Karen, the model that we met in the last episode, the one that played by Vanessa Angel, come back to the complex from a shoot, whereupon Karen immediately just pulls her dress over her head and dives in the pool in her underwear because she's a model and she's a free spirit, I guess. Watching it again to make a gif for the visual aids, I was like, are we supposed to think she's on drugs? Like, this is very strange behavior. It's the middle of the day, but fine. Jake comes out at the sound of the splash. Joe reminds us through dialogue that he was mad at her in the last episode for reasons, but then she starts kissing him and he gets over it. And Joe tries to tell Jake about the shoot that they just did, but Karen interrupts in clip two.
Hey, hunk. Come on in. First, they had me in this helicopter all day, and then it was night and I'm shooting ASA 1000, pushed to the max so I can get the Golden Gate in the background. Yeah, right. So what's for lunch?
I called for this clip because I wanted Dave to have something to think about. And there were photographing things. Mm-hmm. Joe did a photography. So if he had any comments, I thought I would invite them. Dave?
Let's hear that clip again.
Hey, hunk. Come on in. First, they had me in this helicopter all day, and then it was night, and I'm shooting ASA 1000, pushed to the max so I can get the Golden Gate in the background. Yeah, right. So what's for lunch?
Well, it kind of checks out.
Okay.
For the time, ASA 1000, I mean, you would probably, if it was that tough, you probably would go with ASA 1600, but the science is solid.
Good to know.
I'd also like to note that literally nobody, outside of people who write Cosmopolitan magazine cover lines, has ever addressed anyone or talked about anyone as a hunk. Mm-hmm. It's like saying cute buns.
Yeah.
Not a fucking thing that happens. Shut up, Karen. Vanessa Angel is very, like, she's fine in this role. She's sort of winking at it, and she plays very good drunk. Mm-hmm. She and Tori Spelling should have had a spinoff together. Mm-hmm. But this whole plot line. Ugh.
Yeah. So they keep talking, basically ignoring Karen, moving toward Jake's door. Karen tries again, saying they're getting her all hot and bothered with their kissing. So Joe throws her apartment keys at Karen and goes into Jake's place. And that's where we leave that one. Some other day, Karen is hanging around Joe's place while Joe develops prints from their shoot, showering Joe with compliments and saying that Joe could model, and picking up Joe's camera to take pictures of her as Joe dodges. And when Karen backs off, she asks Joe out with her the next night, just the two of them. But Joe promised to have dinner with Jake. Karen tells her to bring him. Joe says he's not much of a dancer. And Karen says, but he's so much fun to look at, which, you know what? True.
Yeah. So, where's the lie?
Out at that club, Jake is trying to make out with Joe when Karen drags him onto the dance floor and starts grinding on him and then pushes him up against a wall and starts kissing him, which he resists barely. I made a GIF of this so you can see. He clearly kisses her back, but then to get her to stop, he grabs the back of her hair and gets her off his face by like gently tugging it, like, oh no, women hate that. They hate it when men do that. Please.
God. Yeah. I don't think he resisted at all.
No. Well, I mean, only at the end when he was like,
yeah,
oh, wait,
like
stop.
weird choice by either the director or Grant Chow. Anyway.
Indeed. So Karen says that Joe wouldn't mind, and Jake says he might before going over to the table where Joe is waiting and announcing that they're leaving, but Joe doesn't want to leave Karen, who can't possibly drive home. So he says they'll call her a cab, but then she waylays them and tries to get them to go with her to a video room that will blow their minds.
Clip 3.
Well, you're doing pretty well there yourself.
Uh-oh, Jakey doesn't approve. He thinks I'm drunk. Joe, do you think I'm drunk?
Yeah, you have had a few.
You know what? I think I'm going to have a few more. Miss!
I will
another
take her
round
home and then I'll
here.
Just call a cab.
Are you serious?
I'm not just going to leave her here. Go ahead, party pooper. We'll be fine. It was supposed to be girls' night out anyway, right?
Fine. I'm out of here. See you at home, Joe.
Don't wait up.
See what I mean?
Whip it. Whip it. Okay.
So Joe and Karen flop onto a couch later, Joe saying she's beat. Karen says this life is what Joe is made for, not her depressing life and boyfriend at the complex. And Joe is taken aback by Karen telling it like it is. But Karen sees their friendship as the beginning of Joe's new life. She's an artist. She can't close down like that. Karen's where she is because she'll do anything once. And Joe says she's where she is because she's incredibly beautiful. And Karen smirks that it hasn't hurt. And then she goes to kiss Joe and fulfill all of my guesses about Joe maybe being secretly queer, except it's the 90s. So Joe flinches away. She's flattered, but this isn't her. And Karen wants to know how Joe knows unless she tries. But Joe just knows and slinks off to get them some coffee. Lame. Lame.
Yeah. Also, coffee doesn't sober you up.
Sure doesn't.
Darren Star shows, learn it, live it, love it. Also, we never see her again.
Bye-bye. Moving on to our B-plot. Michael is a sociopath.
get used to this one.
Michael is sleeping on an operating table when Kimberly wakes him up and tells him he eventually has to go talk to his wife. He dodges by talking about the next surgery they have to do, but then gets called to the nurse's station, where apparently he gets a message that Jane is outside waiting for him with, as we see before he does, several packed suitcases full of his shit and a very sour expression on her face over her polo dress, which Sarah noted in her visual aids she had. I think I did too. I think we all did.
Yeah, I think so. Even Dave.
Mm-hmm. Michael tries to act normal, but she's not having it and starts yelling at him about being full of shit. He wants to talk, but she refuses and shakes off his hand and peels out in her car. And that night, Allison gets home from work to find Jane doing pool maintenance. And instead of saying nothing because, duh, she opens a can of worms again like a fucking idiot in clip 4.
Isn't that normally Michael's job?
Michael's gone, Allison. I threw him out. You were right about all of it. I caught him with Kimberly. He's been having an affair. But if you want some kind of gratitude or thanks, I'm really not in the mood.
Wait a second. Michael's having an affair?
Yeah, he was. But he probably still is. So if there's any problems, complaints, or repairs, you can bring them to me for now on.
Jane, I am so sorry. I almost didn't tell you.
It doesn't matter.
It's over. I'm moving on.
Look, Jane, I've been through this before. If
this? This exactly? I don't think so, Joe. Look, I'm fine. I'll be great.
Oh, Allison. Why?
Yeah. I mean, what? If only we got to keep this, like, impatient, bitchy Jane, but we don't. Sigh.
Alas. So when we next see her, Jane is sitting crying next to a ringing phone, on the other end of which is Michael in a shitty-looking motel room, which is how we know Kimberly is not even letting him stay with her. Rude. Speaking of whom, right after he's hung up, she knocks on his door and enters, flirtatiously mocking him for his self-flagellation. But he's in a state and says he can't just jump back into bed with her. Kimberly reminds him that he said his relationship with Jane and his relationship with Kimberly were different, but he says when Jane walked in on them, that made them the same thing or something. The point is, if he has a chance to save his marriage, he can't keep seeing Kimberly. This is not news she cares to hear in clip 5.
What is this, Michael? Huh? Some sort of compulsion to be needed? To make that conquest and then the hell with it? Move on, move forward, move back, and screw the wreckage you leave behind? What? What? Did you need to be the center of everyone's life? Jane's mine? I thought I knew you.
Kimberly, you are completely out of line here.
No, Michael. You are out of line if you think you can mess with my feelings. You obviously want me crying, begging. And you know what? I was willing to be there for you, even shed a few tears. But I'll tell you something. I draw the line at groveling. You know what I think? I think you're threatened by me. I think you are threatened by anyone who's your equal. It's all one big ego trip to you.
How about that? You do know me.
Yes. And you're a bastard.
No, I don't really understand how the music feels emotionally. It's sort of like, well, that happened. Saxophone. Like, guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was a guitar, but yes, point taken. Yeah, she does some amazing crazy eyes in this scene, by the way, too. And at one point, she just stops and stares at him, and she sits so still and so unblinkingly that I made a GIF so you could see that, like, that's how long she can hold it.
Yeah.
It really just looks like a photo. She's amazing.
Yeah, this did not start with the accident, spoiler.
Indeed. The next morning, Michael's sitting in his car looking pathetic when Allison comes out on her way to work. He stops her to beg her to tell Jane that he dumped Kimberly and can't live without Jane. At the moment, Allison's disgusted by men's lust for reasons we will get to, but she agrees to talk to Jane later. And they do meet out for lunch. Jane starts by talking about how great it is to have Michael out of the apartment since it's given her time to reflect on all the mistakes she's made, like accepting his marriage proposal when she hardly knew him. But Allison interrupts to announce that he wants to reconcile and asked her to relay the message. But Jane doesn't want to end up going through this whole thing again. Well, you definitely will. So trust those instincts. Oh, you won't. Then it's night. The Mancinis are meeting outside a restaurant. She just wants to walk. He says he doesn't have a whole speech prepared, but she could have fooled me. Clip 6.
I love you. I miss you. What I did was the biggest mistake of my life. And all I'm asking for is your forgiveness and another chance. Janie. Honey.
All I know is I want to stop the pain. This awful feeling of failure.
Well, you know, I think a lot of that is because we never talked.
I realize that.
So what do we do?
There's a marriage counselor I heard about. I called her because a friend at work thought I should. If you want, she's agreed to meet with us.
Sure. Whoever, whatever it takes. I just, I really need your forgiveness.
Michael, no matter what happens, I don't know if I'll ever be able to give you that.
Oh, you'll cave.
You shouldn't. Do you get the feeling the show was still, like, trying to decide what it wanted to do as far as Michael's heel turn?
In at this point?
Yeah.
No, I think that they probably, because it's so late in the season that they probably knew they had to have him switch back in the finale. That would be my guess.
It just sort of seems like at this point, like, we are supposed to think that he is sincere about this, which he like might be in terms of only being a reflex machine that approximates human feelings, but it's sort of like it's not as clear as it usually is in a soap opera. Like, cut away from her to him twirling his mustache. I don't know where I am emotionally.
Yeah. The problem is that they've previously have established that he paid for med school because her parents loaned him the money. And they need to like lean on that more heavily to explain why he wants to stay with her. Cause otherwise, like, it doesn't really make sense. He doesn't seem to, especially the more evil he gets, it's like, just leave her. Like, why are you stringing her along? You know, at this point you can sort of see like, well, he's contrite. He's basically a good guy. He's got Catholic guilt, blah, 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 blah. But then, you know, he also has opportunistic/financial reasons to not want to fuck things up for himself, but they're not leaning on those yet, and they should.
Yeah, that's true. You're absolutely right.
Anyway, the next day or some other day at therapy, Jane says she's not still angry at Michael. She now just feels numb. And Michael looks blank. And the fact that he is in a barely blue button down, which is done all the way up to the top button, would already make him look like a murderer, even if his face wasn't like completely empty and serene, but it is. And so he looks like a total psycho. But anyway.
Yeah. Like, who you need to perform listening, either character or actor, but
yes. Yeah. You can see this in the visual aids. Apparently, that's the end of the session, as the therapist recommends meeting twice a week. And since there's no threat of violence, she thinks it might help if they resumed living together, but it's up to them. And outside, Michael is aghast to have that much of his week taken up by therapy. But when Jane wearily crabbing about it, he quickly says he'll do anything to heal their relationship. She's willing to let him come home and sleep on the couch unless and until she starts to feel uncomfortable. And he agrees and will be home by dinner time and he'll cook. But we don't actually see that reunion. When we return to the storyline, it's the next day and Michael comes home as Jane's packing a picnic basket to take to the beach. He asks to come, and when she doesn't answer, he says he understands that she doesn't want him to, and keeps talking until she finally says it's still awkward for her to have him there. And then he gets called into work, and she just stares at him in obvious disbelief/loathing, so he tells her to call the chief resident if she wants to confirm his story. But she says she's not going to, and he keeps haranguing her until she yells at him to quit wasting time and go, and he decides to try acting wounded and see how that goes in clip 7.
I'm really trying here. Okay, I made a mistake. Fine, be mad. But you could at least make an effort.
You are not going to turn this around on me. I didn't do anything wrong here. I have been the perfect little wife. Moving here with you, supporting your career, tolerating your complaints about the hospital and Dr. Levin. You know, Michael, maybe we got married too young. Maybe that's what we did wrong.
You didn't have to say yes. Nobody was twisting your arm.
You're the one who screwed up, not me. So just go! Go to the hospital and leave me alone.
That music sounded like the end of Terminator at the end there.
Yeah.
Also, you've done a couple things wrong and you're wearing them both right now.
Leave me alone.
Yeah, for sure. Definite Terminator vibe.
Yes. It turns out there actually is some kind of mass casualty situation happening at the hospital. And when Michael shows up, the chief resident sends him to assist Kimberly. And Michael hesitates, but only for a second and without gloves. And this fucking show tries to make it look romantic. It's these two idiots cast a guy's arm together. And then Michael wipes plaster off Kimberly's cheek with his thumb. And they say they missed each other. Blah, 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 blah. That's where we leave these two. Not practicing good hygiene, by the way. On to the A-plot, Billy's dumb love triangle adds a baby. So, Allison rode back from Palm Springs on the back of Jake's bike behind Billy. Sounds terrible. But I guess her extremely satisfied vagina kept her from noticing any discomfort. Anyway, Jake comes out to reclaim his vehicle and Billy and Allison stagger into their apartment to kiss some more, which, of course, she stops to make him talk about their relationship in her usual unbearable way. Clip 8.
We made love.
We sure did.
And that doesn't worry you?
Well, I'm too happy to be worried.
But there is a practical side. I mean, now that we're back in the apartment, I don't know. I feel like we're moving too fast.
Ugh. We'll take it slow. We'll be discreet. We won't tell anybody until we're ready, okay?
I like this.
What?
This take charge thing.
Oh, that's me. Take charge kind of guy.
Also, as Sarah noted in her visual aids, in the course of this, I thought he was shushing her, but he actually boops her. He boops her nose.
Yeah, you don't boop someone you're fucking. It's a good rule, and I'm going to insist it be followed.
It is a good rule. Apparently, Billy thinks the fucking is going to resume immediately, but Allison has to get to work. She just spent the whole weekend at this fucking retreat. This job sucks. At the office, Allison sticks up a sad snapshot in her cube of herself and Billy as Amanda comes in. Allison, with only moderate snittiness, replies to Amanda's question about why she wasn't on the bus by saying she came back that morning with Billy, since she did end up getting that note he gave Amanda to pass on, after all. Amanda guesses an apology is in order, but freshly fucked Allison chirps that it's all right. And Amanda says she left a message on their machine because she really needs to talk to Billy. And Allison purrs that she's sure he'll get back to her eventually, quickly changing the subject to work. But then Amanda hurries away around a corner to catch her breath. And then Billy's at work writing poetry. No spoilers, but more on that later because we're going to hear it.
Oh, no.
Thank God. His coworker Cameron comes up behind him to roast him in clip 9.
Billy, you have missed your calling. Hallmark is always looking for new talent.
Well, what took you so long? You've been fact-checking this thing for 2 hours. I mean, how many facts could there be?
Not too many. That's what took so long. Billy, where did you learn about journalism? Dateline? We would have been sued out of existence if I'd let this go through.
I'll fix it tomorrow.
How come? You got a hot date?
What makes you say that?
I think she just walked in. Hi, I'm Cameron, editor, publisher, multimillionaire. If you ever tire of him, I'm available.
I mean, I don't feel like you're available for that team.
No, thank you.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That fact-checking line, like, this is actually far better, like, bitchy dialogue than you would expect from this series.
Mm-hmm.
Cameron for president.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I would have said that he'd been coded gay to this point, which just reveals yet again how long ago this was, that even this tiny bitchy side character has to be explicitly spelled out to be straight. But who knows? Maybe he's bisexual. We don't know.
I mean, Heather Locklear. It's powerful.
It's true. It's a really good point. Anyway, Amanda's come over to say that while she has gotten the impression from Allison that Allison and Billy are a couple now, and Amanda thinks that's great, she missed her period. And Billy makes a number of uncomprehending faces. Obviously, you can see them in the visual aids. So Amanda has to go on and explain she took a home test and she thinks she's pregnant, and Billy may still not understand what that means.
No.
Mungo not smart.
No.
So Billy staggers home in a daze to find romantic candlelit ambiance and Allison making dinner and cheerfully babbling gossip and smugly reporting on her exchange with Amanda at the office that morning until Billy blurts, she's pregnant. And Allison is stunned. So Billy says it's not necessarily certain, just likely. And Allison whimpers that it's not fair as they hug. And at work the next day, Amanda's getting through her day like a professional while Allison trails her through the bullpen, pouting so much that Amanda figures out Billy told Allison about the pregnancy. Allison says there's no point discussing it. Amanda says this isn't anything she planned or wanted and that she considered not telling Billy. And Allison repeats that she doesn't want to know and that the situation has nothing to do with her, which is not really the case if she's dating Billy, but sure. And Amanda makes sure that Allison doesn't think this is some kind of trap, and Allison snaps that she doesn't, even though clearly she does. And then Billy's there because he's going to the doctor with Amanda and didn't tell Allison about it. This is all going great so far. Good job, guys. So Allison's drinking a martini at Shooter's that night when Billy finds her. She guesses from his face that the doctor confirmed Amanda's pregnancy, and he barely nods, and she starts to take off before he stops her to whine that he didn't want this, but otherwise does not sound great. Clipped in.
No matter what's going on with Amanda, this is a temporary problem.
Right, temporary. Until it means braces or a college education. Let me ask you something. Does Amanda want this baby? I can't believe that she does. God, maybe it's not even your baby.
Oh, come on.
All right. But if it is an unwanted pregnancy, there are options.
I'm aware of that. That's her decision.
We were so close.
Allison.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Temporary problem to describe the unplanned pregnancy is, I mean, even to your girlfriend who is not the one who's pregnant, not a great look.
No. Also, ain't you heard? This is a Fox show.
Right, seriously.
I mean, it is, but there's going to have to be a Fox carriage or a Fox topic pregnancy for that to happen. So,
spoiler.
Buckle up.
The next day, as Billy and Amanda are walking in the marina in their terrible outfits, just a brief pause to describe them. Amanda is in this crazy, like a sleeveless turtleneck that goes down past her crotch and white pants. And he's in an aloha shirt, but it's tucked into chinos with obviously no belt.
Oh.
And Billy still really isn't talking so good in clip 11.
It's not like we're the first couple that this has ever happened to. You know, at first it was hard to look at this logically with a clear mind, but now that I've had some time to let it soak in, I realize that it doesn't have to mean anything. You know, it's not the end of the world.
If you're talking about an abortion or adoption, those aren't options for me. I could never do either. And it's not some big moral thing. I just personally couldn't.
This is my baby, right?
I don't believe this.
Well, I have to ask.
Yes, it's your baby. You can relax and stop asking all these embarrassing questions because I'm not asking anything of you, Billy. I don't want you to feel obligated or sacrifice a thing. This is my responsibility, and I never thought otherwise.
Oh, boy.
I mean, good, because Mongo Mere Pawn in Game of Lady Parts. But also, Jesus, guys, like, the whole is this my baby thing, like, literally never how you do it. Like,
right.
Just jump in, be a man, both feet, or figure it out.
I mean, assume that if you're the one she told, it, probably then, yes, you're a probably responsible.
Yeah.
You know, like, think it through.
Yeah. Although, I don't know. The idea that, like, it's unfortunate for this show. Like, we all know it's Fox. We all know it's the early 90s. We all understand how pregnancy lines are and are not going to be handled. But to give this particular character the, like, well, now that I'm pregnant, you know, now I'm a mom and that's it, is just like, no, like that doesn't line up with anything we know about her. On the other hand, she still has feelings for fucking Billy.
Right. Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is no.
I mean, no to all of it, including like, I don't expect anything from you and I'm not going to ask anything of you. Like, this is the kind of talk that has ruined what we now can call generations of teen moms on the Teen Mom franchise. Like,
yeah,
this isn't how you prove you're a girl boss. Like, people have responsibilities. It's part of what you sign up for when you have sex with someone. Sorry.
Well, yeah, also just like, so they can't say no is not a reason not to ask for things. Take them to court.
Yeah.
Start with Brian Austin Green.
One other thing before we move on from this, like, even though Amanda has been presented as, like, obviously a sexually experienced vixen, like, all we have known about her is that she had like some beard type of guy that she was saying was her boyfriend, but was in New York. Like, we have no reason to think she's been sleeping with anyone else, and neither does Billy. So why would he even ask if it's his?
Yeah.
Like, they were a couple going back months at this point.
Yeah, especially at this time in human history where it was like, you really did have to be quite choosy,
mm-hmm.
or death would ensue.
Right. Yes, that point in human history. Cough. So, since Amanda has just absolved Billy of all responsibility, Billy can ask what she's going to do, and she tells him she's going to manage, like she always does. And her dad's about to come to town again, and she's not that eager to tell him, since it doesn't fit into his plan for her. And Billy suggests that she not tell him yet. She snorts that she has to, because they share everything. But back to Billy, he's off the hook. He can go back to his life and his romance with Allison. And as Joe gets ready to go out, she must endure Allison ranting at her about the state of her relationship with Billy. Joe tells her she's jumping to all kinds of conclusions when Billy hasn't even figured out his own feelings yet. And then Jake comes to pick Joe up for their night out and also save Joe from Allison's whining. And as Allison's leaving, she sees Billy coming out of their apartment. And he vaguely says he's going out for a little while. She asks what's going on with Amanda and everything, and he says he's working on it and takes off. And, of course, goes over to Amanda's place, where her dad has already arrived and obviously has not yet been briefed about recent events, since he's cordial to Billy and thinks he's still in the picture. And Billy pulls Amanda aside to suck some more, but from a new angle, ordering her not to tell her dad anything yet in clip 12.
I'm serious. I don't want anybody to know yet.
Well, this isn't exactly up to you. I thought I made myself clear earlier.
Look, until I know where I stand, and I don't yet, I just want to keep it quiet.
Fine. If that's what you want.
Who cares what he wants?
Yeah.
Really?
You've already said you're going to take care of this by yourself. Like, stand by that if that's what you're going to do. This is not up to him.
Yeah. Also, it's Billy.
Yes, that was your first and fifth and probably 20th mistake. Anyway, Allison is up watching an old movie when Billy comes home to her recriminations about why he couldn't just tell her he was going to Amanda's place. He says he didn't want to hurt her. She was planning to say shitty things about the baby, she claims, but Billy interrupts to say he felt obligated to go over because Amanda's dad was there and Amanda didn't know what to tell him, which is not an accurate representation of what we saw.
No.
Allison sadly asks whether Billy asked Mr. Woodward for Amanda's hand while he was there, which Billy says is unfair, and Allison loses it in clip 13.
You feel obligated to her. Fine. But what about me? What about what happened this weekend? 2 days ago?
I'm trying to work it out.
I gave everything to you. I risked every emotion I have, every feeling, every instinct. And I'll tell you something. It was worth it, because we ended up with something great. Real passion. And a real connection that in this town, in this world, is impossible to find. Impossible! And all this time, since you found out, you never once asked me how I was feeling. Am I supposed to just sit here and wait? Because I can't do it, Billy. Am I supposed to just stand by patiently?
Just stop it, all right?
Will you figure out? No.
Listen to me. Can't you see that I hate myself for this? I mean, this whole pathetic mess? It doesn't mean it has to change what's going on with you and me, okay? I'm not going to lose you.
It's too late, Billy. You already have.
A few things. My notes read, shut up, Allison. He's facing the prospect of a child. That is how my notes read phonetically. Mm-hmm. But Courtney Thorne Smith, like, this is not worth it. But she's bringing it.
She does. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Even though, A, her character is a fucking Eeyore who is so annoying. Like, even when you want to be on her side, it's really difficult because she's so whingy.
Yeah.
And B, like, she's sobbing. She's so upset. Like, she's being selfish, but, like, she's legitimately upset and it's well acted. And then it's time for Andrew Hsu to have a line, which is like somebody spilling a crate of alphabet blocks. Like, oh my fucking God. Like, this is so much worse than I remembered.
Yeah.
This whole pathetic mice line. Like, oh my God, dude.
Yeah. Go away. Yeah, it's brutal. Like, they have done a good job to this point, like, establishing that, you know, Allison was already insecure just generally, even before Amanda came into the picture and before she started seeing Billy at all. So this all sort of scans, but it's true. Like, she is being completely ridiculous and not acknowledging, there could be a baby coming. Like, people have to think about things that are not you. Sorry. Like, your relationship is, your romantic relationship at least is 3 days old, you know?
Well, and that's the other thing. Like, everybody's known about this for, what, 17 hours? Like, maybe give it a day or two and mm-hmm. see where everything's at.
Yeah. So, the next day, Billy rather smugly tells Jake how Amanda told him he can just walk away from the baby, as we hear in clip 14.
Well, Amanda says I'm off the hook, you know, I can just walk away. I know that's what Allison wants. And I got some serious feelings for her now, so I don't know. I'm just confused, you know, I just don't know what to do.
So you want to talk to me? Because I have a kid. All right, first of all, I didn't have a choice. I didn't even know I had a kid. By the time I found out, it was too late. So I guess the only thing that I can say to you is if you walk out of this now, that's it, man. You don't get a second chance. That kid is hers.
What I would say to him is, you're not fucking discussing what color to paint the fucking accent wall. Please try. Like, I know you're shooting outside and I know you're Andrew Hsu, but a little effort, please. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I got serious feelings for her. I don't know what to do. Like, all right, Joey Bag of Donuts. Like, someone help him. Help him.
So he really sad. Does need help. And it's in terms of like seeking counsel from Jake, because he also is someone's biological father. Like, we haven't heard tell of that child since Christmas. So I'm not sure he's your best role model.
Also, I love that Andrew Hsu's usual face of like his resting confuzzle face fits perfectly, because it's like, actually, you were just the only like dude character in the credits who was available. So that's why I'm asking you.
Yeah. I mean, please, like, go talk to Matt, who is a social worker, about the consequences of when dads don't look after their kids, maybe.
Yeah.
That does not occur. At her place, no. Allison is collecting laundry, including off Billy's bedroom floor. Like, she does his laundry. Get a grip, woman. But it's only so that she can find the poem, which he printed at work. Let's hear it. Clip 15.
Allison, in my arms, asleep on my shoulder, endless night and dreading morning, dreams that come true, that really do come true.
I had to leave the music on, it's so bad. Wow.
I mean, endless night? Sounds like she fell asleep and you're trying to figure out how to saw your own arm off to get away from her. Which is probably accurate, because Allison, oh God.
Yeah, she does have a big
also
head.
Also Geneva font or Chicago font?
Yeah, one or the other. Mm-hmm. But which is it? Endless night or dreading morning? If the night is endless, there is no morning to dread. Get it together, buddy. Anyway, While Allison is having an epiphany about the feelings Billy really does have, after all, in reaction to this poem, Billy himself is running down the marina to Amanda's dad's boat and tell her that despite what she said, he wants to be with her all the way through this thing. Though as he keeps talking, it becomes clear he only means the pregnancy and then after the kid is born, it's TBD, but whatever, it's enough to get her to hug him. The boat pulls away from the dock and Amanda tries to get him on board, but he does not get on board. Do you get what they're doing?
No.
Okay, me neither. On board. Let's close it up by naming the episode MVP.
Cameron.
That's a great pick. I was happy to see him still around, even after Billy got the job that rightly should have gone to Cameron instead of quitting in disgust. I'm going to say Amanda's dad. He seems to have his shit together. He's got a boat, you know, has a lot of time to travel.
So. Yeah. Okay.
Least valuable player. Billy.
Yeah. I mean, there's some other people in the conversation, but Billy.
Yeah, it's Billy. Let's be real. That's it.
Next time on Again With This, a gun charge, a stalker, a proposal, a handful of ultimatums, and the seeds of a tawdry drinking problem. But enough about me. It's the first season Melrose Place finale. Put some black market Purell on your eyeballs and head over to our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're on our website at againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. You can support our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm Hallmark Recruit, SDB, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Thruple Truther, Tara Ariano. She is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Least Romantic Font, David T. Cool. Talk to you next time.